నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. హరే కృష్ణ. సో వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ ది భగవద్గీత చాప్టర్ 13. Chapter is entitled Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness. Text number 8 to 12. We'll read text 8 and then we'll read the translation of the rest of the verses. Text 8. Amanitvam adambhitvam ahimsa kshantirarjavam ఆచార్యోపాసనం శౌచం స్థైర్యం ఆత్మవినిగ్రహ అమానిత్వం అదంభిత్వం అహింసా క్షాంతిరార్జవం ఆచార్యోపాసనం శౌచం స్థైర్యం ఆత్మవినిగ్రహ అమానిత్వం అదంభిత్వం అహింసా క్షాంతిరార్జవం ఆచార్యోపాసనం శౌచం స్థైర్యం ఆత్మవినిగ్రహ. ఇఫ్ ఎనీవన్ వుడ్ లైక్ టు రిసెక్ట్ కెన్ రిసెక్ట్. అమానిత్వం అదంబిత్వం హింసా క్షాంతిరార్జవం ఆచార్యోపాసనం శౌచం స్థైర్యం ఆత్మవినిగ్రహ. ఎనీవన్ ఎల్స్ వర్డ్ టు వర్డ్ మీనింగ్? అమానిత్వం humility, adambhitvam pridelessness, ahimsa non violence, kshanti tolerance, arjavam arthesu vairagyam manahankara evacha janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukha dosha anudarshanam asaktir anabhishvanga putradara grahadishu nityam cha samachittatvam ishta nishtopapattishu మయి చానన్య యోగేన భక్తిరవ్యభిచారిణి వివిక్త దేశ సేవిత్వం అరతిర్జన సంసది అధ్యాత్మ జ్ఞాన నిత్యత్వం తత్వజ్ఞానార్థ దర్శనం ఏతత్ జ్ఞానం ఇతి ప్రోక్తం అజ్ఞానం యదతోన్యథ. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ అండ్ పర్పోర్ట్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఏసీ భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్. హ్యూమిలిటీ, ప్రైడ్లెస్నెస్, నాన్ వయలెన్స్, టాలరెన్స్, సింప్లిసిటీ, అప్రోచింగ్ ఎ బోనఫైడ్ స్పిరిచువల్ మాస్టర్, క్లెన్లీనెస్, స్టడీనెస్, సెల్ఫ్ కంట్రోల్, రినన్సియేషన్ ఆఫ్ ది ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ సెన్స్ గ్రాటిఫికేషన్, యాబ్సెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫాల్స్ ఈగో, ది పర్సెప్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది ఈవిల్ ఆఫ్ బర్త్, డెత్, ఓల్డ్ ఏజ్ అండ్ డిజీజ్, డిటాచ్మెంట్, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and rest, even mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. Purport. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mai chanani yogena bhaktir avyabhicharani. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop in him. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasyasi Bhaktir Bhagavatya Kinchana Sarvair Gunais Tatra Samasate Sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, Acharya Upasanam, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. So it's a huge purport, and Prabhupada is describing each item of this verse in the future sections. So we will take one item and then we will read the purport for each item. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur. Hare Krishna. So we'll continue our discussion on this very important chapter, the 13th chapter, entitled The Nature, the Enjoyer, and the Consciousness. So in the beginning of this chapter, Lord Krishna is explaining what is knowledge. He defines knowledge in the first 3 or 4 verses before this section. And he says, knowledge means to understand the two knowers of the field of activity. He defines the field of activity as this world or this body. So in this body, there are two knowers. Knower means one who knows. I, the person who is residing in this body, I am one of the knowers. And there is one more knower who is the Supreme Lord in the form of the Paramatma. He is also existing within this body. So both these personalities are the knowers of the activities of the body. But there is a difference between the two knowers. One knower, that is me, I know only the activities of this body. That too, to a little limited extent. But Krishna as Paramatma, who is the other knower, he knows the activities of not only my body, he knows the activities of all the bodies. Because the Paramatma is present in each and every body, accompanying the individual soul. So, he is the super soul. He is known as super soul. And we are known as the soul. super. That means he knows everything. All that we know plus something additional. Now in these verses, from verse number 8 to 10, Krishna is listing out 20 items. And he calls it, this is knowledge, he says. So in this verse, in these set of verses, we understand how to obtain knowledge. So there are so many qualities required. Humility. Namrata. Pridelessness. And then ahimsa, non-violence, tolerance, accepting the shelter of a spiritual master, ability to perceive the miseries of birth, old age, disease and death, ability to see that this world is a miserable place, there is birth, old age, disease and death. This ability to see is considered a sign of knowledge. And one who is not able to see this is considered an ignorant person. So, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, one of our predecessor acharyas in the line of Lord Chaitanya, he says, 17 of these 20 items is common for everyone. In the sense, is common for both the devotee and a jnani. Jnani is one who is trying to acquire knowledge from various sources. He may not be a devotee, but he is interested in acquiring knowledge. And Jnana Yoga is also considered a part of a bona fide method of understanding God, God realization. So a devotee is simply interested in serving the Lord with love and devotion. So there is a slight difference between a jnani and a devotee, jnani and a bhakta. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, 17 of these items, the first 17, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki, Shri Gaur Nitai ki, Shri Gopal ji ki. 17 of these items is common to both a jnani and a devotee. Two of them that come in the last verses. Adhyatma Jnana Nityatva Tattva Jnana Artha Darshanam. Accepting the importance of self-realization. The need to understand how important it is. The need for self-realization. That is an aspect of a jnani. And Tattva Jnana Artha Darshanam. Philosophically searching out what is true jnana, what is not. Learning various kinds of Upanishads and these kind of philosophical books. That is a very typical trait of a jnani. But one quality that stands out and is exclusively belongs to a devotee, that is called Mai Chananya Yogena Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. That comes in the 10th verse, which is not written here. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me. This is the sole quality specifically for a devotee. No one else engages in pure unalloyed devotion to the Lord. Pure unalloyed devotional service of the Lord. So this is a quality specifically belonging to a devotee. Now, Prabhupada here explains that all good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. So one who is engaged in performing devotional service, all these qualities, these 20 of them, automatically start developing in that devotee's personality. He becomes humble, he becomes tolerant, he becomes simple, not a very complicated life. He, in due course of time, accepts a bona fide spiritual master. He can see the dangers and evils of birth, old age, disease and death. All these things, simply by rendering a devotional service, a devotee acquires all these qualities. So one may wonder then, why study, simply perform devotional service? Why take extra endeavors and put special efforts to develop these qualities? That also helps. We can't just justify our actions, saying that I am a devotee, so I can do whatever I want. Anyway, in due course of time, these qualities are going to develop in me. So let me do whatever I want. That is also not a sign of a devotee. He puts special efforts not to misbehave. He has complete faith that practicing devotional service will develop all these qualities in him. But still, he puts extra efforts to develop these qualities on his own. He tries to be humble. He tries to be tolerant in adverse situations. He tries to make his life more and more simple. Not much complications. He puts extra efforts for all these things. And then, with the help of the Lord, because he's performing devotional service, definitely, he is going to develop all these qualities. So, the Bhagavatam confirms this. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate sura. One who is a devotee, in him, all the good qualities of the demigods start manifesting in him. So right now we may see some devotees who may not be having the ideal qualities. We may expect, he is a devotee, why is he not behaving properly? He khud ko bada bhakt samajhta hai and then he is misbehaving. How can that be? So we should understand that because he has taken shelter of the devotional process, it's only a matter of time that he is going to develop all the good qualities. On the other hand, one may see a non-devotee who is not at all engaging in devotional service, but he has all the good qualities. So we may wonder, how can this be? What is the special importance then of performing devotional service? Here is a person, a non-devotee. He has all good qualities. He is simple and he is non-violent. He doesn't do any harm to anyone. He is charitable. All the good qualities we may expect in a human being. And this so-called devotee, practicing devotional service, he is misbehaving. So we may lose faith seeing such different behaviors. But we should somehow keep faith in this explanation that devotional service can award us all good qualities and all perfection in due course of time. And a non-devotee who may appear to have all good qualities will surely fall down if he doesn't take shelter of devotional service. It's only a matter of time. How long can he maintain his morality and ethics if he doesn't find a higher purpose following them? He may maintain all his good qualities, but whenever there is a temptation and no one is around him to look at him, to check him, he is definitely going to break them if he has no shelter of devotional service. We have so many examples of that. So this verse says, one who is not a devotee is simply hovering on the mental platform. All his morality, ethics and good qualities are based on his self-concocted ideas. It can never last long. So these are 20 items, as we saw. And all these 20 items, Krishna is declaring this to be real knowledge. Now, surprisingly, we don't find our common branches of knowledge listed here. We don't see Krishna mentioning physics, chemistry, mathematics, biology is an item of knowledge. Astronomy, computer science. Some or other, these items are not appearing in this list. That doesn't mean these items didn't exist at that point of time. It doesn't mean people were unaware of these branches of knowledge. If you look into Indian history, the Vedic history, people were much more advanced in all kinds of knowledge. They had perfect knowledge of astronomy. They had good medical knowledge, as Ayurvedic knowledge tells us. People had good medical knowledge, the structure of the body, the physiological and all biological symptoms. And they could treat all kinds of diseases. So medicine, the knowledge of medicine existed even at that point of time. Knowledge of astrology, astronomy was there. But surprisingly, those items of knowledge are not categorized as real knowledge. In fact, we find something totally different that Krishna calls it as real knowledge. We may wonder why. And anything outside of this is ignorance, is all nonsense. So what is the real purpose of gaining knowledge? Why should we gain knowledge? We have come into this world. We are told to do this, do that. Gain knowledge about the world. Why? Why should we gain knowledge? From the mundane perspective, we need knowledge to get a good job, get a good career, earn a good money, good salary, and then enjoy life. Right? That is the purpose of knowledge. But this doesn't apply to everyone. There are so many other people who have not even passed school and still they are big, big industrialists holding big, big positions. They don't have all this knowledge. Still they are working and managing so many big, big institutions. So what is the real purpose of knowledge? Krishna explains that knowledge means to know what is matter, to know what is spirit, and to know the controller of the both. To know what is matter, what is spirit, and the controller of the both, controller of the two. That is real knowledge. So to know what is matter. Matter means this world around us, made up of dead matter, atoms and molecules and their combinations, various permutations and combinations. That is matter. This world, the universe around us, this material world and its functionings. To know what is spirit. Spirit means we the self. I am a spirit having consciousness, having different kinds of emotions, which is not exhibited by dull matter. So spirit is different from matter. The sign of a spirit is consciousness. We see two kinds of bodies, a dead body and a living body. What is the difference? The living body is conscious. That's why we call it living, a living body. Right? And we don't call a dead body conscious because there is no consciousness. So there is something extra, something additional in a living body. The matter is there in both the bodies. Right? Same amount of chemicals, maybe a slight difference. But ultimately it's matter, both the bodies. What is there extra in this living body? It's consciousness. Right? It is spirit, which is different from matter. It is not a product of some atoms and molecules. So to understand this spirit is a sign of knowledge. And spirit is a part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit. That is God, Krishna. We are all minute particles, infinitesimal particles of the Supreme Spirit. So understanding spirit means understanding who I am, who we are, understanding our real identities, and understanding the identity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Both are spirit. And understanding the relationship between the individual spirit and the Supreme Spirit. So matter, spirit, and the controller of the both. So Supreme Personality of Godhead is controlling both material energy and the spirit, spiritual energy. So it's like a triangle. Here is matter, here is spirit, that is we individual spirits, and the controller who is controlling both matter and the minute spirit. Understanding these three functionings constitutes real knowledge. Anything outside this boundary is, from the absolute point of view, ignorance. Anything outside this. Now, these 20 items describe how we can get that knowledge. What are the prerequisites to get that main knowledge? So, first item is Amanitvam, humility. Let us see what Prabhupada has to say about this. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion. And consequently, sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles. And then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. So humility is a very important prerequisite to gain real knowledge. It's a part of knowledge, one of the 20 items of knowledge. Humility means not to be anxious for honor. Lord Chaitanya says, Taro rapi sahishnuna amanina manadena. We should not be hankering for respect, but we should be ready to offer all respect to others. But our modern culture is teaching us exactly the opposite. Never offer respect to anyone, but expect all respect for ourselves. Right? Look at outside world. Everyone wants respect. Everyone wants a position. Everyone wants recognition, praise. Everyone wants the whole world to know their good qualities and recognize them. But they are not at all eager to recognize others' good qualities and offer respect to them. So this is the consequence of modern education system. After acquiring so much knowledge in 15, 20, 25 years in school and college, this is what we are learning. Not to offer any respect to others. even to our elders, and expecting all respect for others, for ourselves. So therefore, this is one test where you can conclude that whatever we have learned in school and colleges ultimately is useless. It may help us in some practical day-to-day dealings, but from the point of view of attaining the perfection of life, all this knowledge is useless. That's what people are. Look at people's character. Becoming so much proud. Second item is pridelessness. Adambhitvam. But we are becoming more and more proud. Whenever we get some perfection, we become proud of it. A person attains an Olympic gold medal, he becomes proud of it. Some achievement, he is immediately proud of it. And he wants to show it off to everyone. False pride. It's a sign of ignorance. Pridelessness is an item of knowledge. Next item. Ahimsa Kshantirarjam. Ahimsa. Very common term. Ahimsa. Non-violence. Non-violence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. This is a standard understanding of non-violence. Now in the beginning of the Gita, if you see, this is just the beginning, right? Of the battle of Kurukshetra. The battle has not yet begun. Krishna is instructing Arjuna on the knowledge of the absolute truth. And after this knowledge is spoken, then Arjuna begins to fight. And here Krishna is talking about non-violence. And what is Arjuna going to do after understanding this knowledge? He is going to kill, commit violence upon millions of soldiers. Krishna is just instructing him non-violence, and he is going to provoke Arjuna to fight the whole battle where millions of people are going to be killed. So it may appear contradictory. It was Krishna who incited Arjuna to fight. Arjuna was ready to leave the battlefield and go to the forest, trying to preach non-violence. But Krishna is talking non-violence and he is provoking Arjuna to fight. So therefore we need to understand the real understanding of violence and non-violence. The example is given of a doctor, a surgeon. A surgeon, he goes to the hospital, he sees a patient who is suffering from some terminal illness. So therefore he says he needs to be operated. Surgery needs to be performed. Now those who do not understand the seriousness of the disease, they may feel the doctor is committing violence. Bichara patient, sora hai, he is committing violence by performing the surgery. But those who are in knowledge of the disease, those who are in knowledge of the medical profession, they will understand that the doctor is not committing violence. In fact, the so-called violence of surgery is ultimately going to benefit the patient. Right? It may appear a little painful, but this pain, this small violence on the patient is going to ultimately benefit the patient by curing him of the disease. Similarly, we should understand that whatever violence Krishna is recommending or Krishna is encouraging Arjuna to perform in the battlefield of Kurukshetra is like a surgical operation. On which body? On the body of the society, on the social body. If the whole society is considered a body, then Krishna is the surgeon who is going to commit that small minor surgery. Surgery means removing all unwanted elements, all cancerous elements. So Duryodhan and Party and all the Kauravas who are assisting him are considered the unwanted elements of society, who somehow by Krishna's arrangement have come together in one place so that the operation can be successfully done in a short period of time. in just a matter of 18 days. Otherwise, if cancerous tumors are spread all over the world, then Arjuna has to go to each and every place and then perform the surgery, which is time consuming. So Krishna, by his mystic power, he arranged everyone, all unwanted elements to come together in one place, in Kurukshetra. And then he used Arjuna as his instrument to commit the surgery, to perform the surgery. So it was violence, but for a higher cause. So what is non-violence, as we understand generally? Not committing violence to the body. Now, there are many religious institutions who say that non-violence means not committing violence to fellow human beings. There is no problem in committing violence to non-humans. Therefore, they justify their killing of animals and eating animal flesh. So, animal slaughter is also a very, very gruesome form of violence. Especially is the slaughter of cows. So that is also a part of violence. Unnecessary killing of animals just to satisfy our tongue. Animal slaughter is considered a very sinful reaction. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So when we give pain to others, any other living entity, that is going to bounce back upon us. And in some future lifetime maybe, or in this lifetime also, we are going to get the reaction of this action. Non-violence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. But actually, non-violence means to not put others into distress. A more deeper understanding of violence is to give any kind of distress to anyone. Even mental distress. Mentally or insulting someone. That is also considered a more subtle form of violence. So avoiding that is also means we are practicing non-violence. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. Now this is the highest understanding of non-violence. If we are not allowing people to progress on a spiritual path, in spite of having knowledge with us, we are committing violence. If we don't allow people to progress on the path of spiritual life, in spite of we having the facility, then we are committing violence upon others. That is the most deepest understanding of non-violence. Non-violence doesn't simply mean do good, do everything good. I'm not giving any pain to others. That's okay. That's okay to some extent. But what are we doing for others' benefit? How are we helping living entities to gradually progress towards the ultimate goal of life? If we are not doing anything in this regard, that means we are involved in violence. One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. That is non-violence. So every living entity is trapped in the cycle of birth and death. And it's our duty, because we have access to this knowledge, it's our duty, especially as an Indian, to enlighten others in this regard. Next item, kshanti, tolerance. Tolerance means that one should be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. if one is engaged in the advancement of spiritual knowledge, there will be so many insults and much dishonor from others. This is expected because material nature is so constituted. Even a boy like Prahlad, who was only 5 years old, was engaged in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge. He was endangered when his father became antagonistic to his devotion. The father tried to kill him in so many ways, but Prahlad tolerated them. So there may be many impediments to making spiritual advancement in spiritual knowledge, but we should be tolerant and continue our progress with determination. So as soon as one takes to spiritual life, we will be insulted. Kya sadhu ban gaya? People will say. Why do all these regulative principles? Just eat, drink and be merry and enjoy life. That is the goal of life. But when one sees someone taking seriously to spiritual life, he comes under criticism. He has to tolerate the criticism of his friends, his relatives, his family members. Sometimes his parents also. Sometimes children. They may not be favorable to our practicing of Krishna consciousness. In the case of old men who are taking to spiritual life, their children will not support them because they are too busy with their enjoyment. And in case someone in the youth takes to spiritual life, his parents are too busy in enjoying life, in their retired life. And they generally advise the students, children, why take up spiritual life now in the youth? That should be taken in the old age. Now enjoy. This is not the time for spiritual life. Bhagwan ke liye bahut samay hai. But then if you ask them, why don't you take now in the old age? They won't take up. They have no answer. So tolerating. We have to tolerate so many people. Friends and relatives and family members. Tolerating any adverse situation that may come into our life. As soon as we take up to spiritual life, we can expect more problems than one who has not taken to spiritual life. Because Krishna is going to test you, test us. How serious we are in regard to pursuing the ultimate goal of life. And if you are not very serious, even a small distress will make us give up the whole process. So we should be persevering and determined to continue on this path with full determination. That's what Lord Brahma explains in the Bhagavatam. Tatte nukampam susamikshamanu. One who is tolerating all kinds of situation, he has alone the rightful claim for liberation. No one else. Without any complaining. So there are still many items. We have just covered 4 or 5. And in the coming days, maybe tomorrow or the day after, the rest of the items of knowledge will be covered. So basically we need to understand that what is real knowledge and what is ignorance. Otherwise we will be in this confusion and this delusion that whatever I am doing now is okay, that is real knowledge. People are so eager to gain information of different subjects. They will read books and volumes of books, collecting information and loading their brain with so much data. And that's what they think, that is real knowledge. But every few years, this knowledge is going to get outdated. And that old knowledge doesn't remain knowledge anymore. Real knowledge means it doesn't change with time. It is constant. Therefore, it is called absolute. That is absolute knowledge. It doesn't change with time. Other knowledge is relative. Relative to the effects of time. Once Radhanath Maharaj spoke a very nice statement. He said, knowledge without character is always destructive. Real knowledge is meant to bring out good character in a person. That is the real goal of knowledge. That's why we see in this history of Mahabharata, there is a nice story where where Ekalavya, you know the story? Ekalavya, when he approached Dronacharya for getting the knowledge of martial, the weapons, he was refused. Dronacharya refused to impart that knowledge to him. But he imparted all that knowledge to the princes, Kauravas and the Pandavas. When it came to Ekalavya, he refused. Why? Because he knew that this person is not qualified to get that knowledge. Because he lacks good character. And if a person who is lacking good character, if he gets a knowledge, any higher form of knowledge, he is definitely going to misuse it. So therefore, in the Vedic times, imparting of knowledge was highly discriminatory. It was not given to anyone and everyone. Oh, just come and pay some money and get admitted to a college. That was not a system. A person's character was tested. And if he had good character, only then knowledge was distributed. Because if you give knowledge to everyone and anyone, that's what we see in the society today. Misused form of knowledge. So much destructive. So equality all the time may not be beneficial. Sometimes the authorities or the leaders of society have to discriminate where to impart knowledge and where not to impart knowledge. Otherwise, in the name of equality and brotherhood, if we start distributing knowledge to everyone, this is what is going to happen. Complete chaos in society. Knowledge is there with the good people and the bad people. Right? Bad people are definitely going to misuse it, in spite of all the good intentions of the good people. The whole purpose of knowledge is defeated then. Better be selective in imparting knowledge. First form the character of the person. Once the character is formed, then impart knowledge. That's the whole purpose of culture. Culture means to bring out good character in a person. Teach him good character. And once the character is there, then he has the right discriminatory power to use knowledge properly. Otherwise, power corrupts. There is this famous English saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Knowledge is power. So a person is knowledge without character, he is going to misuse it, definitely. So we'll stop here. And if anyone has any questions, we can take one or two. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.